Hello and welcome to the programme which looks at the Holy Land. I am Paul Calvert. Psalm 46 verse 1 from the New King James Bible says this: God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. I'm with Barry Barnett, who's originally from the UK, and we are talking about Kinder Transport, which your mother was part of. Where was your mother from, and what was the situation like there being Jewish?
So my mother was born in Berlin in 1935, and you can imagine right in the middle of the Nazi era. And as the years went on, the situation got unbearable. There was, of course, Kristallnacht in 1938, where my mother was hidden by her aunt so that she couldn't face any trouble or anything. And it just became unbearable. And the Nazis were out to find my mother and my grandfather and my uncle. So something had to be done. So they put her on the Kinder Transport. So the Kinder Transport began in 1938 and went through to 1939 until the war, when, of course, it stopped. And my mother was on one of the last children's transports out of Germany. So my grandparents took her to the train station, that's right, where they said goodbye, and she got on a train with her brother, my uncle, and the two of them came across on a boat to Britain, who, thank God, rescued and saved not just my mum and uncle, but 10,000 Jewish children. Wow, so many. And I know at the time there was big discussion about it in the politics of Britain. There was arguments in the House of Parliament, but finally they did agree to take the children, thank God. I mean, if they'd said no, then my mother would have been killed by the Nazis. So she survived. She came across to Britain, and then she was taken to various foster families and also a Quaker school, where she was very happy in a Quaker school. And she wasn't so happy in the first foster family. They didn't treat her well. I think they resented having her. In fact, there's a story she tells us that she was only 4 years old, but they made her ask for food in English until they gave her food, which I think is quite cruel way, very cruel way of teaching her English. So she wasn't happy there, but that was only a few months. Then she went to another foster family. That was okay for a year. Then to a Quaker school, which was lovely, but that was only for 2 years. And then finally to a foster family that loved her, and she loved them. It was a farm. And she says in her book that she's written that she made friends with the animals because she could trust them, especially the horses and the pigs. So she'd learned not to trust adults because everything had blown up in her face and she'd lost her parents effectively. But she trusted animals. She became a great friend of the animals, like Dr. Doolittle. And then she always wanted to be a farmer. She ended up studying dairy technology and then becoming a scientist and a biology teacher. So she didn't become a farmer, but she's always loved farms and horses.
Who arranged the Kinder Transport?
So as far as I understand it, the Kinder Transport was arranged by the British government with a lot of help, obviously, from Jewish and Christian organizations in Britain. Probably also the embassies were probably involved and Jewish and Christian organizations in Europe. So it was a kind of joint thing. But the main thing was the British government allowed children to come as refugees, whereas, as we know, the rest of Europe and even America didn't allow any refugees, which was so sad.
So this saved her life, basically.
Yes. Thank God that the Kinder Transport saved my mother's life, because I always remember that 1.5 million Jewish children were killed by the Nazis in the Holocaust. 1.5 million. About 10,000 Jewish children were saved, and my mum was one of the lucky ones.
What could they take with them? I imagine it was very, very limited.
Yes, that's right. I think they were only allowed to take one suitcase. I think. I haven't checked that, but that, I think she came with a teddy bear in her suitcase. And that's pretty much it. So literally, she left behind her life. It must have been so scary as a four-year-old, because her brother was 7, so he had more understanding. Still very young, but some understanding of life and adult life and everything. But when you're 4... What do you know about adults or what's going on, and where's your mum and where's your dad? It must have been so traumatic.
So she had a nice life on the farm, but I imagine she would always think about her real mum and dad. But she wouldn't know anything about them, I presume.
Well, as far as I understand it, she received some letters first in the first few months and then via the Red Cross during the war, but that stopped after a while. So she probably only received letters for maybe, let's say, a year, and then the war happened, and she must have thought, well, she told us that she thought they were dead because the letters stopped. So she blocked them out of her mind, and that's it. I've got new parents now, let's get on with life. Yeah.
And what happened to her parents?
So that's another story. So so my grandfather, Robert Michaelis, he was a lawyer, and he managed to get on a boat to Shanghai to just escape the Nazis. He told us, actually, that he was hiding in the Schwarzwald, which is the wood just on the edge of Berlin. He was hiding in the woods for a while, but then he managed to get on a boat and got to Shanghai. He left his wife behind in Germany because she wasn't Jewish, so she was able to stay with her family and hide from the Gestapo and the Nazis. No one knew how long the war would be, so that was the safest thing. So he ended up in China, and then eventually the Japanese took over China during the war, and he ended up in a Japanese internment camp, which he never talked about. And then finally in 1949, this was 10 years after he'd seen his wife and children, he wrapped up his legal business in Shanghai, came back to Germany, got back together with his wife after a 10-year absence, which I cannot imagine how difficult that must have been.
Did he have to actually look for her, physically look for her, or had there been connection already?
That's a great question, Paul. I don't even know. I have no idea. He must have known where her family lived in the countryside. So he somehow connected with people he knew and found her. I don't know. But I cannot imagine that conversation after 10 years absence. And then together they came across to Britain to find their children. And their children, my mum and uncle, as I say, were then very happy on a lovely farm in Petersfield in Hampshire. And suddenly these two imposters turn up at the doorstep. We're your parents. We're your birth parents. And she's like, what? I thought you were dead. I don't know you. So what a difficult situation. And then my grandfather, being a very good lawyer, he fought for custody of the children and won it. So then my uncle by now was 18 and already had been accepted at university, at Cambridge. He went to Cambridge University. So he stayed in England. And my mum had to go back as a 14-year-old to Germany. And how traumatic that must have been, a second horrible experience. And she was just ill. So in their wisdom, my grandparents realized this wasn't working, so they let her go back to England to stay with her loving foster family on the farm, and they visited her during the school holidays and things and made a new relationship with her, which was remarkable.
Must have been very difficult, because as a father and mother, that's your child. But at the same time, being the child, well, I don't know who you are or anything like that. You know, you're strangers to me.
That's right, Paul. I really honour my grandparents. I mean, what an incredibly difficult situation to have to deal with the Nazis, first of all, escape, bring back the family, try and put the family together. I really honour them. They were very, very brave, wise people. And they both had breakdowns after all this and died early. So they suffered. They suffered, but I honour them. Louise Michaelis was my grandmother's name, and Robert Michaelis, my grandfather. He became a judge. It's just a very quick side note. He became a judge in Germany, and he was part of the group that brought Nazi war criminals to justice and tried them and convicted them. He also was part of the group that changed the Nazi laws, because a lot of people don't know, but the Nazi laws were in force for several years after the war, which is terrible. So he was part of the group that changed the constitution and changed those laws to get rid of those horrendous Nazi laws. I'm very proud of him.
Did your mother speak about her experience when you were a child?
Yes. Now, unusually, because I know that a lot of Holocaust survivors couldn't speak about their experience, and my uncle couldn't. He couldn't talk about it at all. But my mother bravely started to talk about it. She also had some psychotherapy to help her and then became a psychotherapist. So she was able to talk a lot with us as children, to talk a lot about her experience, about anti-Semitism, about what it's like as a child to lose your parents. And we all felt great compassion for her. Yeah, yeah.
And is she alive today? And if she is, how old is she?
Yes, she's 89 years young. And she's doing okay. I mean, you know, a little bit slower than you'd expect when she was, you know, 70. But she's doing very well. 89, we're all preparing for her big 90th birthday in January. And she lives in Hampstead in London. She's been there about 40 years. And she's just taking things very easy. She spent the last 20 years talking to schools about her story and about genocide. She became a genocide expert and a lecturer, and she's talked in schools, universities, synagogues, churches, everywhere that will have her. And especially she loves telling the children because they have such great questions. So she's done that for 20 years. She's kind of, I think she's come to an end of that now. It's too tiring now. So she's just relaxing and enjoying her twilight years.
What does she feel about what happened on October the 7th? It was a huge massacre here in Israel. And from that, of course, was war in Gaza. And now Israel is being accused of genocide. So how does she feel about that?
Well, she was horrified. I mean, genocide has very specific definitions, both in the legal terms and also in the general terms genocide, and this was definitely not genocide. So she was horrified to hear that Israel's been accused of genocide. She has a great compassion both for Israel, the Jewish people, obviously, and for the Palestinian people. She has compassion for them both and understands what it's like to be a victim. So she was very, you know, upset about it all, but she knows that Israel is a country that is, you know, fighting for its existence and a country that's always protected Jews. And if circumstances in history had been slightly different, she would have ended up in Israel, I would have thought. But she ended up in Britain during the war.
So now she's a UK citizen, but does she often go back to Germany to see?
Yeah. What happened was my uncle, after graduating Cambridge University, he fell in love with his au pair, who was German, and went back to Germany, and they built a life there in Mainz. So my mother always got to visit very regularly, her brother, and we got to visit Uncle Martin in Mainz and our cousins, three cousins. So we've always had a great relationship with Germany. I've always seen the new Germany as a really great place, full of kindness and love, and my cousins have been very loving. So it's always been a positive place for me. But for her, for my mother, it's always been bittersweet. She always carries the terrible memories of the trauma, but she also knows that her new family, her nieces and nephews, very happy there and are nice people.
It must have been a real trauma to actually leave your family and go to another country. It's hard to imagine doing that at a four-year-old age.
Yeah. She says that without her seven-year-old brother, she would probably have gone mad because he kept her sane. He just looked after her. And especially the fact that he was the one she could trust, where she couldn't trust anyone else because adults had let her down at four, so she's not going to trust any adults. And some of them weren't very nice to them either. So really it was her brother who kept her going. And I believe in my heart that it was God who was looking after her and his hand was on her and on my uncle, yeah.
Did she have a good relationship with her parents afterwards, after everything had sort of passed and time had passed?
It was very difficult. I think the best way to describe it is, at best, it was a difficult but kind relationship. So they were never, I don't think, really, really close. But she understood that they all did the best they could with repairing the family. So she did build up some, I would say, some very good memories. Certainly I found my grandfather loving. My grandmother died when I was three, so I didn't know her at all, really. And my mother has talked about them with both affection but also reservation, and it was complicated. So I would say it was a difficult relationship, yes, but it was okay.
So when your grandparents came over to the UK to look for her, how long did it take to find her, and what was the process? What did they have to actually have to do to find her?
I don't know, actually, Paul. I think they must have contacted the Kinder Transport organization that must have had records of where the children were. Anyway, he found her, and you know, it must have been very hard after that, because then he started a legal case to claim my mum and uncle, to claim custody. So it was difficult. And by then she'd had several years on the farm, and the foster family really loved her and wanted to adopt her officially. But of course they couldn't, because they didn't know what had happened to the parents. So it was all a bit of a mess.
but I just honour their courage in dealing with it all and being so wise to let my mum go back to England, which must have been a second trauma for them, to lose their children a second time. So I honour them, yes.
And your mother has written a book. What's the book about?
Yeah. So the book is called Person of No Nationality, and it's really her autobiography, especially during the war years. It documents the Kinder Transport and also right up to the Kinder Transport reunions, which were happening, the 30th, 40th, 50th, 60th reunions. And she just traces what it's like to be a child growing up with just such trauma and how to recover. And it's beautiful. She talks so nicely about the animals, as I referenced before, and how much she loved the horses. And in fact, when we were children, she took us horse riding every summer in Wales, and we learned to horse ride. And that's been a great joy and a lovely memory and experience for us. So she shared some of her love for animals with her children, which I think is quite nice. So it's a very good book. I would say that. I'm her son, so I'm biased, but I still think it's very well written. And it reads, you know, as narrative, it's not heavy in any way. It's not a document, it's a book.
With the rise of anti-Semitism today, what is your prayer for the Jewish people?
Ah, what a good question. Well, as a believer in God, I do believe that God looks after the Jewish people, that he has kept his hand on us throughout history remarkably. We've survived so much oppression and persecution, we should have been wiped out long ago, but God has kept us going. So my prayer is that the Jewish people, we will all seek God for his protection that he gives us and for his wisdom that he gives us to know how to handle this horrendous spread of anti-Semitism that's happening today since the October 7th war. And also just for God's wisdom in how to handle all the terrorists who want to kill us here in Israel. All these terrorists around the region who are just committed to destroying Israel and the Jewish people. So my prayer is for the Jewish people ourselves to turn to God and to trust him.
So your mother wrote a book. Tell us where people can get a hold of that book.
Okay, so my mother's book, my mother's called Ruth Barnett, and her book is called Person of No Nationality. And that's because she didn't have a nationality until she was 18, when she was then granted British citizenship. And the book is on Amazon, so you can get hold of it. I think it's about £10.
Okay, well, Barry, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you for joining us today. Pray that God will move by his mighty power in the Holy Land and bring his peace.